appetit.
She's so famous and so beloved, I don't really have to introduce her, do I? I mean, people make pilgrimages to her old house in Cambridge and leave boxes of butter on the fences.
Welcome to the French Chef. I'm Julia Child. You know, the egg can be your best friend if you just give it the right break.
Julia Child was frank about the fact that her big break came long before her cookbook, long before her PBS series. It came during World War II when she met her husband, Paul Child, and worked for the wartime precursor of the CIA. She once talked about it with Charlie Rose.
I was in the OSS. I was a file clerk for the whole of the war. I had no languages, and I could typewrite, and I offered my body to my country. There was no doubt about it. We were saving the world.
That from the woman who many believe saved American palates. But the details of her time in the OSS weren't exactly clear as a perfect Amber Aspic, at least not until now.
They were not spies in the sense that people think of operational agents dropping behind enemy lines. They were intelligence officers.
That's Jeanette Conant. She's written about intrigue and intelligence before in her books The Irregulars and Tuxedo Park. I recently spoke with her about her new book, A Covert Affair, Julia Child and Paul Child in the OSS.
Julia had a very responsible job. She handled top secret material. In fact, she used to joke that she developed the top secret twitch from handling so much sensitive material. And she was a very able and effective intelligence officer in the field, but she was really not a spy, as most people think of it in Hollywood terms.
But their story just has such this tinge of sort of cloak and dagger and romance to it, wrapped up all in one, as you said. How did Julia and Paul Child meet?
Well, they were both recruited by the OSS and sent overseas to Ceylon. And they were working in Detachment 404, a small OSS intelligence mission there. Paul was designing war rooms for the Allied generals, and Julia was in charge of the registry. And Julia was pretty much smitten immediately, but Paul was quite the ladies' man with a roving eye, and it took her quite a long time to really get his attention.
How did Julia then, you know, stop Paul's eye from roving? And they formed this incredible bond and such a strong marriage. How did that happen?
Well, it happened over a great, great many months. They served together for a year in Ceylon, and then they were both transferred to Western China to a very remote military outpost in Kunming at the foot of the Burma Road, working very long hours in very rough conditions. They suffered through one of the great historic droughts in China in 1945. Their entire camp was swamped under 3 feet of water. It was followed by a deadly cholera epidemic. And then they even had to endure bouts of rifle fire as the Chinese Civil War encroached on their camp. And Julia was just tremendous under these very stressful conditions. And Paul really came to admire her and rely on her. Out of that came this enormous bond of affection, which very slowly in the following months, as they moved back to the States and settled into their peacetime lives, settled into a real love affair.
Mm. And you write so beautifully about, obviously, their time in France, which is very well known. It's where Julia falls in love with French cooking, and because of that goes on to be such a legend in American culture. Do you have any ideas as to why Julia and Paul's time in the Far East, in China, why, you know, the influence of that food never really sort of made itself very strongly felt in Julia's later life as chef extraordinaire?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. As Julia put it very often, she would say, the war made me. She was really a sheltered, privileged California girl. It was going overseas. It was going to India, to Ceylon and China that opened her up to new experiences, new cuisines. And then Paul introduced her to really trying to eat new kinds of delicacies, to the wonderful world of spices. He taught her how to use chopsticks. And she fell in love with food.
Well, Jeanette Conant, we've actually got a little clip of Julia Child describing that. So let's listen.
In China, that's where I really got passionate about food. Because if you didn't eat at a Chinese restaurant, you had to eat terrible army food of water buffalo and canned tomatoes and dried potatoes. It was dreadful. Yeah.
So as she developed her skills, she was living in Paris, she devoted herself to French food, and she would always say later that she didn't tackle Chinese food, which they adored, because one cuisine was all she could master in one lifetime. But when they were together, their favorite thing to do in Cambridge was to go eat at Joyce Chen's, which was one of the great Chinese restaurants when I was growing up there.
But then later on, they move to Germany. They're actually summoned to Bonn. Both of them bump up against some of the most important people in post-war Germany, including, if I may say, your grandfather.
It was one of the ironies of this book. I did not realize it when I started that Paul was working really for my grandfather in Germany. He was the chancellor of post-war Germany.
This
when
is
it
James
was divided
Conant.
Yeah, James B. Conant. And he had left the presidency of Harvard and accepted the chancellorship of Germany.
It's such an amazing, one of those wonderful coincidences because, you know, as you write, your grandfather, he oversaw the end of the occupation, and his last act before he departed from Germany was to actually oversee the rearmament of West Germany, which apparently Julia didn't think it was the right time for that.
Well, I think for so many Americans who had experienced World War II and had so many friends and relatives who had fought in the war, it was a very emotional moment to see the Germans rearmed.
And that emotion also spills over into, you know, what was happening back in the United States that you write very eloquently about, and that is basically the sense of post-war paranoia. How did that touch Paul and Julia Child while they were in Germany?
Well, the Cold War hysteria gave birth to a sort of spy fever, the belief that communism and communist spies had infiltrated every nook and cranny of government and that the security of the United States was really in danger. McCarthy, one reporter wrote, you know, was a political speculator, and he hit on McCarthyism. That was his oil gusher. So Paul became very, very worried about his own standing. He was very liberal. He was quite outspoken about his political beliefs. And they really began to fear that his reputation and his loyalty might be questioned.
And in fact, it was. I mean, he received this very ominous telegraph while in Germany saying, from the United States, saying, report soonest for consultation. And then when Paul goes back to the United States, he ends up getting questioned by a couple henchmen, I'll call them, for Senator McCarthy. And he sends this really just pithy and perfect telegram back to Julia saying, situation like a Kafka story.
I know. Isn't that amazing that he used that phrase, Kafkaesque? But it really was for him. You know, nobody told him outright, honestly, what was happening to him. And it was a horrifying experience with two FBI officers who questioned him about his past, his friends, his family, his politics, and then even questioned him about his homosexual proclivities.
As they put it, yes.
Yes, implying that because he was a longtime bachelor who had married Julia very late and had no children, that he was homosexual. And as Paul observes, you know, in those days, being a homosexual to the McCarthyites was just, you know, one step removed from being a communist and a traitor.
But what's really revealed, and I think this is the part that maybe not very many people know about, is that what the FBI agents kept coming back to in their interrogation of Paul Child wasn't necessarily about him, but about another woman entirely, someone named Jane Foster. Now, who is this person?
Jane Foster was a wonderful character, a very bright, witty, alluring OSS agent that had been in Ceylon the whole time Julia and Paul were there. She was a counter-espionage officer. She ran native agents for the OSS and did some very serious work.
She's almost kind of the opposite of a young Julia Child, if I may say. I mean, Julia comes from this conservative California family, but you describe Jane Foster as being spontaneous, you know, as you write, a wild, messy girl, always in trouble. I think there's even a point in which Jane Foster says she wants to infiltrate Indonesia, I believe, and be the White Queen of Bali. Can you give us a little hint as to what happens to her?
Well, she is accused of being a spy, and then she is indicted, and the U.S. attorney in America tries to have her extradited to the United States to stand trial. Jane Foster did not want to come back, and she sought the right to remain in France. So she never did stand trial, and in a sense, it means that we'll never know completely whether she was innocent or guilty. And it also meant that she could never go home again, and she had to live out the rest of her days in exile.
And then on the other hand, when you were going back and looking through these FBI files and Paul and Julia Child's papers, how did all of this hysteria that they were caught up in the long run, how did it affect Paul and Julia Child?
Well, it affected them very deeply. He never really recovered from, I think, his FBI interrogation. I think it left him so discouraged and disgusted by the State Department, and he really lost heart. He retired at the age of 60, and they were very lucky that just at that time, Julia's cookbook was just about done, and then it was pretty much an overnight success, and she then became their major source of income.
Well, Jeanette Conant, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jeanette Conant is author of A Covert Affair, Julia Child and Paul Child in the OSS. Conant will be doing a live reading of her book tonight at Porter Square Books in Cambridge. Find out more about it at our website, radioboston.org.